This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday Magazine. Pete Dillon with you in the chair with the very, very fabulous Lana. Hello, welcome.
Hello, how are you today?
Good, thank you. It's good to be in the studio with a very fabulous, glamorous woman.
That's
taking
me.
You through, leafing through your Saturday Magazine for the next 2 hours here on Joy 94.9. Of course, we are a hub of intelligent discussion.
Absolutely.
So we're led to believe.
Yes, I've been told. I had to raise my game a little.
We'd like you to imagine that we're the insert out of your weekend paper that you're going to be leafing through for the next 2 hours, and we're going to look at politics and sport and technology and a little bit of arts this morning. We might be throwing the occasional blunt barb at Tony Abbott.
Just because we can. I feel so classy and intelligent and Melbourneite.
Oh,
so urban.
There's a great deal to go on. We've got a lot of people coming into the studio. We've got some incredible music. It's all good now. How's your week been? First, we must get over how the week has been.
I have been working and sick and really looking forward to the weekend the entire time. So pretty much like everyone listening, I'm sure.
You've been wishing your life away all week.
I have, yes.
That's unfortunate.
And my niece turned 18 this week.
Right.
So I realised I have an 18-year-old niece, which is disturbing.
Do you want me to just muck with your head a little bit?
Yeah.
I have a niece who's about to turn 36.
Oh, wow.
Oh, 35. She'll be 35 a couple of days after my birthday. So.
And she's lovely, I'm sure. But my God, don't you just want her to be younger?
No, she's always been like a little sister to me.
Oh, that's
yeah.
nice.
Yeah. And aww. She's a good egg. She's got a couple of kids. She's a nice girl. But yeah, she's 36. So it sort of makes me feel old.
Yeah, that's how I've been feeling all week.
We must say thank you to Beck and Bella for a wonderful program this morning on SatMag. On Beckfast. Where's SatMag? Somebody give me a reminder. I need a whiteboard in here just to tell me what show we're doing. And some very good music. There was a track that I particularly liked that when I came waltzing into the building early this morning, I said, I must have a copy of that track.
I just needed coffee. I wasn't paying attention to the world around me, I'm afraid.
Coffee's good. Do you have an iPhone? What phone do you use?
I have a HTC.
Right.
A Sensation XL, and I refuse to go near an iPhone. I hate them with a passion.
Right, you're anti-iPhone. That's going to make for some very interesting discussion this morning because iPhone 5 was released this week in the United States in San Francisco to much fanfare as Apple is wont to do. David Eccles is coming in to talk about said piece of equipment and what's different. We'll also have a bit of a satirical look at something that was done in the US around that as well.
Yeah, and later on we'll also be speaking with Patrick Gilligan from ourSay.org, just having a little chat about what's happening in Canberra over the last week, Tony Abbott and his sort of busy week this week.
Well, he had half the week off.
Well, yeah, but I'm sure he was worrying the entire time about the latest media release and what was going to come out next.
He also accused the government of having a dirt unit, which I find a little hypocritical, and we'll talk to Patrick about that as well because there's some very obvious and well-known pieces of hypocrisy in that. we're going to talk briefly about US politics, but we've decided we might focus on Australia because there's a lot that's happened and it's important.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important. And, you know, we've got until November to be sucked into the miasma, the vortex that is the United States election.
Yeah, there does come a point where you're just saturated with it and you're just like, go away.
Did you see any of the speeches from the DNC last week, the Democratic National Convention?
I did, actually. I was really impressed. You could definitely tell the difference between the parties with the Republican and the Democratic. You know, even like Michelle Obama,
Michelle
Bill Clinton
speech
especially.
Was incredible. Clinton, he had a script and it was after that, after the speech, they put the script online and they determined that about two-thirds of his delivery was ad-libbed.
Yeah.
That's the sign of an orator, of somebody who was a fantastic leader, although there is some conjecture to actually who ran the White House. We'd love to hear from you this morning, 0427 Joy 949. You can send us a text message. If people wish to email, they can. On air at joy.org.au. Sorry, I'm pointing at you going, come on in here, but of course not. You can do things the old-fashioned way, 1300 Joy 949, or you can tweet to us at SatMagJoy949. I think at SatMagJoy949. Lana, are you on Twitter? Do you tweet?
I do, yes.
What's your Twitter handle? Do you want to tweet you directly?
Alana's Tweet.
Alana's Tweet. Or you can catch me at Dylan Pete.
Saturday Magazine, every week from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
Okay, so that song was Tired Eyes by Nick Van Breeder.
And I do have to make an apology. He's not in today. He will be in a future program when he's next in Melbourne to talk about his work.
You get me all excited and then you disappoint me?
Yeah, I know. Well, I want to get you all excited about politics.
Okay, I'll give it a go.
Because I know that you you like a bit of politics, Lana.
I do, yeah. Especially when it's the muckraking kind. It's
so some dirty politics for you. That's
some
nice.
Dirty politics is brilliant. It's like reading The New Idea, except I can feel all superior.
Right. What is? I don't even want to know what the new idea is. I don't know. Joining us to discuss politics is Patrick Gilligan from OurSay.org. Patrick, good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us about OurSay. What does OurSay actually do?
OurSay Australia is an independent social media organisation that is all about enhancing participation in democracy in Australia. So we're all about bringing the public closer with the people in power. We do this by running, online forums in which people can post questions and vote for their favourite questions about, topical issues.
So it was you guys that had that forum, that online forum with Julia Gillard some time ago where
that's right.
There was people could vote on those questions that they wanted asked and answered.
Exactly. In July, Julia Gillard participated in a live webcast with 10 ordinary Australians in which they asked some tough questions of Julia Gillard. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time that's ever been done in Australia.
Is it likely to happen again with the Prime Minister?
We hope so. Absolutely, we hope so.
Good. Well, let's have a talk about the Prime Minister. She's had most of the week off after the untimely death of her father. And before we go any further, I think we need to offer our condolences to her. And losing a parent is a difficult thing at any time. So we certainly are not going to go on the attack this week, given that she's grieving the loss of somebody very close to her. She's actually been quite stoic. She was out for a funeral the other day of an Australian digger. Has still sort of been quietly participating in public life while she's having the week off.
She's stoic. I do think that she is a very, very strong politician.
Mm. And I was looking at some polls this morning, preferred PM poll. She's actually now ahead of Tony Abbott by 1%. So it's a 39-38 with, I think, that leaves about 23 undecided, which is a fairly big amount of the populace all from those polled. But I think we're seeing a revival in her approval of the last couple of months. How do you attribute that to, or what do you attribute that to?
I attribute that to her. She's reiterated her, stuck by her policies. So the carbon tax, we know that Tony Abbott has waged war on Julia Gillard for the past 2 years, particularly on asylum seekers and carbon tax, and Julia Gillard has stuck strong with carbon tax. And I think a lot of that has it attributes to approval rating that we see today.
Okay, so do you think that the Rudd v Gillard thing has died down now, or do you think there's still that possibility?
I think there is. It's a possibility. There's always a possibility in politics, isn't there? They always say, you can never be too sure about what will happen. But a leadership change, I mean, we're going to see an election. An election must happen within a year.
Yeah.
And I think any leadership challenge will only further destabilise the Labor Party, the government. That's right.
There have been whispers, and my intel, I've got a couple of buddies that work in Canberra, have suggested that not only does Rudd think he have the numbers, but also that there is some very strong talk around a challenge in the opposition. The last vote, as we know, Tony Abbott only won by one vote after Malcolm Turnbull fell on his sword on carbon price and mineral resources rent tax. Malcolm has sat very quietly for most of the last 18 months, 2 years. But the last week, we've actually seen Malcolm emerge on a couple of very, very key issues. One where he said that the politicians need to be more honest and that question time needs to improve.
Yes.
And he had the blessing of Abbott in that speech.
That's right. And he also said that there was a deficit of trust in Australian politics, the Australian political debate. today, which and I thought was a
He made another speech on Monday morning when there was some discussion around an equal marriage bill, Stephen Jones' equal marriage bill in the House of Reps. I think he did himself a bit of damage in that respect, where he said, "I would love to be able to cross. I would love to be able to vote for this, but I can't." I actually waged a little bit of war with Malcolm Turnbull this week because he can. He's just got to be willing to sacrifice his opposition portfolio as the opposition spokesperson for communications and give up his seat on the front bench. This is a man that is worth more money than you and I will ever earn. Mm. So it's not about the money for him. So therefore, it's about power, and he's not willing to give up that power as a front bencher. So. Is this an indication that Malcolm's about to make a move on Tony?
I think it's about as strong an indication as you will get from Turnbull. I think he's a very safe politician. He doesn't make a lot of public actions about his ambition. We know he's ambitious because we know that he's had a run
the leadership.
Leadership, and but. Any challenge, I think, for the Liberal Party, conservative by nature, they're not likely to have a leadership challenge within the next year.
But there's conservative, and then there's almost fundamentalist, which is where the opposition is going. They're not called the No Coalition for nothing. They fight against everything. There's been little support for any legislation in the past 2 years in the House of Reps under Abbott's leadership. So. Would it not make sense for them to sort of have a massive swing and take government for the next two terms with a leader that the community trusts, like Turnbull?
I think it would make sense. I still think that it is unlikely. I think that the coalition has really made their bed in terms of their political style for the upcoming election. The attack campaign, Abbott, they're right behind him. After following Turnbull's speech on Monday, I think the reports were that he was brandished internally within the Liberal ranks for that speech and for his remarks about the opposition style of politics.
Turnbull is quite left-leaning, though. He is sort of one of the more left of the Liberal Party members. So would maybe bringing him up to the forefront there and making him the leader, would that sort of negate, the far extreme right draw that they've had that sort of alienates a lot of people?
It certainly would. It would be a massive shift, I think, for the Liberal Party. It would completely, give them a whole new image to the Australian public.
Mm. Do you think it would balance out, though, considering they did attack so heavily the Labor Party with their leadership change? Do you think it would balance out a little bit? And, they would definitely lose that peg of, we're the stable party, but... Do you think it would balance out?
Yes, yeah, it would. I mean, it's...
you're sitting there, you so want to say stuff, but you know that you won't. Let's move quickly on to a comment that was made by Tony Abbott in his first press conference since the Good Weekend piece by David Marr last weekend. Did his first press conference yesterday morning, and he said that the government has a dirt unit... sort of pulling up all this stuff that happened in student politics back in the 70s. Abbott this morning, in Michelle Grattan has written in today's paper that Tony has withdrawn or retracted that statement and conceded that David Marr, the journalist, actually heard the information from other sources. I found this a little bit hypocritical, just in the sense that, the opposition... We've had Slippergate, we've had Utegate with Godwin Gretch, we've had all of the stuff they've dragged up about Julia's role at Slater and Gordon, and when she was involved with a union leader and there was some alleged, financial impropriety. And even as recently as Craig Thompson. So it's almost hypocritical that Tony Abbott would suggest that Labor has a dirt unit.
It is hypocritical, and I think it's quite typical of Abbott's style as a politician. Admit no wrongdoing, admit no defeat, admit no weaknesses, and turn the around back on the government. I mean that is his style. But I also think that this story is it's interesting. This has been brought up. I mean, this is a 30-year-old alleged event.
Doesn't that go to questioning his credibility as a man who could potentially lead this country?
I think that would be unfair to make that that kind of point. I mean, this is student politics we're talking about, and an event 30 years ago.
But people do tend to sort of take these things as major character traits and judge people on them even 20 years later. You've seen that with Julia Gillard and Slater and Gordon, all of that sort of thing. On your forums, is there sort of do people hold on to that kind of thing? Is that the kind of thing that they mention, or are they more focused on policy as opposed to personal issues from the candidates?
Yeah, and I'll say, I mean, character doesn't really come up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's more about policy and what politicians can achieve.
Okay, so is there any prominent subject or policy that people are really interested in at the moment?
Well, it all revolves around certain forums that we run. Mm-hmm. So we've just had the close of the AFL forum,
mm-hmm.
not too political.
Yeah.
And coming
very
up,
very passionate, I'm sure.
Absolutely, very passionate. We had an overwhelming response to the winning question,
mm-hmm.
on the AFL. I'm not sure if the listeners are aware of.
Do it, tell us.
Well, we just had the close of a forum in which the public were able to ask any question of the heads of the AFL, the AFL general manager of AFL operations, Adrian Anderson. And there, as I said, there was an overwhelming response to the number one question. I will just find that question.
How much was asked around the AFL support for homophobia?
That was a big issue. Mm. That was the second most voted for question. The number one question was actually about again culture of the AFL. Mm. This was the big response on our forum. It was more about the culture rather than the rules or anything like that. And the winning question was the AFL's respect and responsibility policy. Quoted from the Respect and Responsibility Policy, represents the Australian Football League's commitment to addressing violence against women and to work towards creating safe, supportive and inclusive environments for women and girls across the football industry, as well as the broader community. Hawthorn player Lance Buddy Franklin is part owner of Nina and Pasadena and Neverland Clothing Store, a brand renowned for its clothing with sexually objectifying and degrading imagery of women. Franklin currently features in promotional videos and images both on the brand's website and in national clothing retailers like City Beach. To go on, it's why has the AFL failed to address this?
People can go and have a discussion about that, or is that now closed?
You can still discuss, but the actual forum itself has closed. That is the winning question, and that's the question that AFL General Manager of operations, Adrian Anderson, will have to answer.
Excellent. Patrick, thank you as always for coming in and joining us. We could sit and talk for an hour about politics and what's happening in the world. Appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome here on Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9.
On Joy 94.9, a look back at the events of the week in our community. Thanks to the Community Network News Team, here's the Joy 94.9 GLBTIQ News Wrap. News Wrap.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Nathan Partenza.
And I'm Jed Gilbert. Former High Court Judge Justice Michael Kirby has spoken out against the Queensland reversals of gay rights. Justice Kirby was at the Pinnacle Awards for Queensland. Kirby, who is openly gay, spoke with Queer Radio Brisbane.
Well, there have been a few developments that seem really back to the future, but I hope that that's only a momentary blip and that we're going to see a return to Queensland as a proper leader for equality for all Queensland citizens. No discrimination, justice for all. That's what we carve on our courthouses, you know, equal justice under law, and that is something we've got to deliver.
Also at the event was Olympic swimming legend Kieran Perkins, who threw his support behind gay marriage.
From my perspective, it's one of those things that you just think it's the 21st century, let's move on. I don't understand why it needs to be such a big deal. It's not something that's affecting most of us in our normal lives.
The Pinnacle Awards provide scholarships for struggling GLBTIQ students.
An openly gay footballer from country Victoria has launched an online petition calling on the AFL to stamp out discrimination and homophobia. Yarraglen Football Club player Jason Ball has come out publicly, calling on the AFL to take its support of the No to Homophobia campaign further than a written statement. The 24-year-old has urged the league to screen the advertisements at the MCG on Grand Final Day, as well as implement a Pride round similar to the Indigenous round next year. Ball told Joy 94.9 that AFL fans need to lift their game as well.
I'm a Collingwood fan. I go to every single match with my dad, and I know at the game, absolutely, the language used by supporters can be homophobic in the same way that many years ago it could have been quite racist. There are things that people are saying that is discriminatory, and people need to take a stand against it. I know that if I was at the game with my boyfriend, I probably wouldn't hold his hand, for instance. It'd probably be the least safe place for me to do that, I think.
Visit change.org to support Mr. Ball's petition to end homophobia in the AFL.
Also, Nathan, he plays his local league's grand final this week, so we wish him all the best. President Barack Obama has put support for gay rights front and centre in his campaign for re-election. A few months ago, President Obama came out in favour of state-based gay marriage, and now he's referenced the gay community in his key election speech to the Democratic National Convention.
We don't think the government can solve all of our problems, but we don't think the government is the source of all of our problems. Any more than our welfare recipients, or corporations, or unions, or immigrants, or gays, or any other group we're told to blame for our troubles.
His opponent, Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney, favors a federal ban on gay marriage, and the Republican vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan has said he doesn't even know why gay rights are being talked about. Adding some irony to the US election debate, the creator of the hit TV sitcom Modern Family has invited Mitt Romney his wife, Anne Romney, to officiate the on-screen wedding of Mitch and Cam, the gay couple on the show. Anne Romney has refused to answer questions about her husband's gay rights policies during interviews, but has previously said that Modern Family is one of her favourite shows.
Malcolm Turnbull has again urged federal MPs to support gay civil unions, saying marriage equality would probably be defeated federally, even if coalition MPs were given a conscience vote. Speaking in Parliament, Mr. Turnbull said that if a conscience vote was allowed, he would vote for marriage equality. Australian Marriage Equality National Convener Alex Greenwich called the coalition's position hypocritical and called again on Tony Abbott to allow a conscience vote.
To Q&N Sport now, here's Tanya Lewis.
The Hustlers Gay Rugby Union team is preparing for the upcoming Purchase Cup this month in Brisbane. The team will take on the Sydney Convicts and the Melbourne Chargers as part of the Brisbane Pride Festival on September 22nd. Hustlers President Charles Gregory says the event aims to promote diversity in the rugby community.
Thank you, Tanya. That's what's making news in the GLBTR community for another week. I'm Nathan Partenza.
And I'm Jed Gilbert. We'll have more news for you next week.
Thanks to Community Network News. That was the Joy 94.9 GLBTIQ News Wrap. For more news that matters to our community, see joy.org.au. joy.org.au.
Saturday Magazine, every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Saturday Magazine, and remember, we'd love to hear from our listeners, so if you'd want to get in contact with us, just SMS 0427 Joy 94.9 or 0427 569 949. Call us on 1300 Joy 949, 1300 569 949, or you can email us on onair@joy.org.au.
Or you can, of course, send us a tweet to SatMagJoy949, which I'm sure Ben is taking wonderful care of, our executive producer this morning. You're with Lana and Pete here, taking you through until midday on Saturday Magazine. We're leafing through what's happening on the weekend, and one of the big announcements this week was the in San Francisco, the announcement of, or the launch of, the Apple iPhone 5. Jimmy Kimmel, who does a late-night program on United States television, had a little bit of fun with this, and here's a little bit of what happened on that program.
iPhone somehow ruins the old iPhone, but it doesn't. It's all in your head. In fact, we set a camera out on the street today, and we told people outside to check out the new iPhone 5, which is unavailable so far. So in reality, what they were looking at is the current iPhone 4S that everyone has. And, well, here's how that experiment played out.
The new iPhone 5 just came out today. We want to know if you'll take a look at it. Tell us how it compares to the last iPhone.
I'd love to. Oh, it's way better. Yeah, it's nice. That's definitely noticeably better.
It's a little thinner. Looks like the screen's a little bigger.
Seems a little bit faster.
Yeah. Faster, lighter.
Feels heavier.
Feels heavier?
I think so.
A lot lighter than the last one. It's a lot faster as well.
Mine's going to take forever.
So this one's faster?
Yeah, definitely faster. Right on.
Oh, it looks very nice. Very nice, very updated.
Oh, my God. It feels a lot lighter and just more, just a lot higher quality. And it's got, if you drop it, it looks like it's not going to break.
like this one has a million times.
The screen is clear, HD.
Colors are brighter.
Oh, it has a video front and back? Mm-hmm. Video front and back, that's cool. This doesn't have that.
So you like it better than the last one?
Yeah, I have the 4S.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm always open for a new phone.
Joy 94.9.
We could talk to the ignorance of the American people, but we shall not to talk about the launch of the iPhone 5 and what we can expect from it when it's launched here in a couple of weeks. We have our tech expert David Eccles with us. Good morning.
Good morning.
How do you react, apart from bagging Americans, to that? I mean, is it because there's so much anticipation that perception can often warp reality?
This is the way Apple work. Apple work on creating demand. So they've been building up. You follow Mac rumors, you follow the websites. Everything's geared around a launch date. They tell the launch date. They control their marketing so incredibly well. There's very few leaks. That's why the iPhone 4S thing last year was such a big deal when that guy left it behind in the bar and one of the CNET journalists picked it up. It was a pretty incredible experience because Apple are so tight with their releases and so tight with their information that the only way we can find out is by third-party suppliers getting specs to build for covers, for adapters, all those kind of things. It's really quite amazing.
So let's go straight to Tintax, because Lana, you're anti iPhone, aren't you?
I am. So, I got an iPod once when I was younger, when they were still very, very new, and I plugged it into my computer and it wiped 2 years of my music off my computer. And ever since then, I have been vehemently anti-Apple.
And that's Apple's fault. It's nobody else's fault.
No,
it was actually a part of their program. They wiped all my music.
Oh, really?
And I will absolutely cut off my nose despite the face. I don't like to be told what to do.
Very
convict
good.
Blood, I'm sure.
Let's talk some very basic language. What have we got on an Apple on an iPhone 5 that we do not have on a 4S?
Let's talk about the big one, 4G, faster speeds.
Okay.
The technology is called LTE, but all we need to worry about is that one of the reasons is that the new iPhone, and if you're going to order online, team, you've got to get the right model. It's the A1429 GSM. If you don't get that model, it won't work at 4G speeds. That's the major thing. We're going to get and the thing is, it's also got this A6 processor, which means basically it's going to be much more efficient. We're not going to have the battery drain issues that we have with current 4G phones. So it's going to be faster. The battery life's going to be longer. We're going to be able to use it for longer without recharging it. It is, believe it or not, even if you were really holding an iPhone 5, it is lighter. It is absolutely everything about it. Widescreen.
I understand it's slightly thinner.
Yes, it is. So it's 18% thinner, 30% lighter. Now, it's already the light. We did a test a couple of weeks ago, and we held a 4G, 4S, and the new Samsung Galaxy S3, and the Galaxy S3 is substantially heavier than the old 4S model. So you can imagine what it's like being 30% lighter again. We're going to be struggling to find out whether we've got our phone with us or not.
Larger screen?
Larger screen. Great thing about this is Apple has finally adopted widescreen model. So now we have basically an iPhone 5. Any video we create is going to actually fit into a standard widescreen television when we play it back. 8-megapixel camera. A really good thing called a sapphire crystal now for the lens instead of glass. Sapphire crystal is the second toughest.
So it's going to be harder to break when you drop it on the ground.
That's mainly only the lens. It's only the lens, not the screen. The screen is still going to crack like every other lens.
I was going to say, I have several friends who like to get drunk, and they will test that theory.
Yeah, well and truly. But the lens, in terms of, you're not going to get an issue with your camera lens actually getting scratched as much with this model than we have with previous models. Retina display, which means basically, theoretically, that more we can actually tell the pixelization on the screen because it's basically so small it's not detectable by the human eye. The big thing is the charger. There's a new charger called a lightning charger. It is smaller. It is reversible. We're all going to have to buy adapters for all our old cables and all our old power and all our old devices if we're going to get a new device.
Let me jump in there. Apple have the USB connection for charging. So it connects to something that goes into a power socket via USB.
Yep.
So is it only that USB cable that we're going to have to change or are they
any of your old devices, so if you've got an iLove alarm clock, for example, not to pick on any particular brand, you're going to have to buy a little adapter, hard adapter that's going to go from the 30-pin adapter that's currently there to this new, very thin, same size as the USB, micro USB, but not a micro USB power adapter if you buy a new device. That's an iPhone 5, the new iTouch, and the new iPod Nano.
So does that cover everything? Like you see everywhere radios and stereos that you just plug in. So is that going to need an adapter as well?
That's going to need an adapter if you buy one of these new devices. So it's clear that Apple have made a conscious decision to get rid of the maligned 30-pin adapter. And one of the biggest problems with a 30-pin adapter in the early days was you didn't know which way was up from down. The thing about this is it's going to work very much as the MagSafe adapter. It's basically going to work either way, upside, downside. Doesn't matter. It's going to work. It's going to charge your device.
Okay. Very quickly, what are the negatives about the new iPhone 5, or have you not heard any?
Well, we can't buy one for a while. They've sold out.
Well, there was an announcement this morning that you won't be able to order online an iPhone 5 yet because basically the quantity that are supposed to be coming into the country are already catered for.
Yep. And so the fundamental thing is going to be supply and demand. Apple's are the master at creating demand for a new product. As yet, the device has only been announced since Thursday morning our time, so it's too early. Not enough people have been able to use it and break it. It'll be interesting to see when it's actually pulled apart. There's a couple of websites out there that the first thing they do when Apple announces a new device, get it open up and display the innards out so that we know what's going on. I think the things that I really like about this are things that have come as part of iOS 6. And that is the ability with this thing called visual voicemail, which means when a phone message, when you're getting called, you can reply with an SMS message, a stored SMS message, busy, call you later, or whatever. You can just click that and it sends the SMS message.
But I had that on a Motorola Jazz.
Well, it's back in an iPhone 5.
You know, 20 years ago, maybe 20 minutes ago, the technology changes so quickly. David, we shall keep our eyes peeled because obviously every man and his dog and woman will want one of these. So we'll keep our eyes peeled and see if we can get some feedback. We'd love your feedback. Are you ordering? Have you already ordered a new iPhone? 0427JOY949. Send us an SMS, email on air@joy.org.au or give us a call 1300JOY949. Or if you're really smart, get your current iPhone or Android phone, download the app off our website at joy.org.au. Just hit the contact button on that app and that will come directly to us. This is Saturday Magazine here on Joy 94.9 and he has been David Eccles. Thank you.
Thank you.
Saturday Magazine, every week from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
Yes, it is Saturday Magazine. Pete Dillon with you and Lana Chafee is sitting opposite me and she is quivering with anticipation.
I am.
Because we're about to talk about
You can see that all the way over there?
I can. I've got my glasses on. I've got my guide dogs on, so I can see. It's a beautiful Saturday morning. You're probably lying around in bed wondering what the hell's going on outside with this weather. It's not as bad as you think. It's just a little murky. That's all it is, a little murky. There's a few clouds.
It's Melbourne grey.
It is. It's a beautiful Melbourne grey. Somebody who's not grey, who's in fact very, very colourful, is a young fellow by the name of Ash Blanders. He's currently playing Toby in a web series called Being Brendo, which has quite a stellar little cast, and he joins us in the studio. Welcome, sir.
Well, hello.
Hello. Oh, you've put on your best voice for us, haven't you?
My dulcet tones.
Yes,
hey, Melbourne. Tones. How are you feeling on a Saturday morning?
Lying in bed.
Lying in bed. Are you thinking of me? I'm thinking of you.
Lovely. Do talk us through this new web series, Being Brendo.
Honey, it's not new. This is seventh season. It's as tired as my face after last night's party. It is a series that follows Brendo or Brendan. You know, Australians just shorten every word. Brendan, he and his friends, their relationships, love triangles, health issues, gay culture, mass culture. That's life.
Is it a bit of a a pointed jibe at some of the stereotypes that exist around our community?
I would think so, yeah. I certainly know that my character, Toby, I very much pushed the stereotype when I started the character. It was written in a very certain way, and I certainly played that up and was very annoying, apparently, for a lot of people as the twinkie sort of the twink idiot character who's just kind of loud and brash. And since then, thank God, my character's been able to be, like, everyone's gotten to know him a bit better. But I think this show doesn't deal in too many stereotypes. There's a lot of weird gays that you don't see on TV all the time, that, like, in the best sense, in terms of, like, they're not all sashaying and being snappy and quippy and zippy. They're kind of the real people with jobs and lives and, you know, body issues. No one looks like a male model. Everyone looks a little busted.
And that's representative of our community, Lana.
Mm-hmm. So the name being Brando, it's a bit of a new name. That's why we got a little confused there. Yeah. The new series. So, So what was behind that? Was there a motivation behind it?
Yeah. There's talk of trying to get the show off the web and onto television. And if that happened, we'd have to have a different name, obviously.
Because it was known as Queer As...
As F... Asterisk K. Yeah.
Queer As Folk, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
Something. I don't know. I think that had been used already, hadn't it?
Yeah. I think there's a little show called Queer As Folk already.
Yes. So it's been rebranded.
Yeah.
How did you get involved?
Well, standard Hollywood story. My housemate, you know, knew the director who knew someone, you know.
Except with someone.
Before I knew it, I had my knee pads on and I got the job. I went... an audition, and I had to this improvised audition, and I was terrible. They got me to leave the room and come in and apply for a job as someone else.
Right.
And they said, "What's your name?" And I go, "Ash." They go, "What's your last name?" I said, "Flanders." And I realized, oh, I meant to be acting. So I was terrible. And thank God I'm clearly the least talented of the cast because they're all very good. I don't want to imply that they're not talented. I'm just a hack.
And you do get to work with folk like Adam Richards and
Judith Lucy and Denise Scott, who are in the Saturday Age today. Another Saturday magazine.
Yeah. I saw that episode, with the two of them, and it was just one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Judith Lucy being masculine enough to make a drag queen look feminine.
Oh my God, I love that
episode.
It
was absolutely brilliant. Yeah,
it's brilliant. They're a lot of fun. I've never got to shoot with either of them yet, but I'm really hoping to in this final next season because they are brilliant. They're so, and the good quality. Like, we've had Jeffrey Rush and Adam Richard, like a lot of good celebs, you know, who can learn a lot from me.
How much of that is about networking and how much is, you know, it's, I know that Adam, for example, knows Jude and
oh,
Scotty
really,
really well. And that's sort of how they end up in this. How much of that is that and how much of it is people sitting back saying, you know what, I want to be in this because this looks a little crazy and a little fun.
I think it's both. I think, you know, like these people come and, they donate their time. They don't take anything for their performances and stuff, which is amazing in itself and probably against many union rules. And they come and they know Colin. Colin Bertrini is the driving force behind this. He works at VAC and he's a writer and he was an actor in another life. And he makes a cameo in one episode and it's terrible. He knows all these people because he's been around a bajillion years. And He just can wrangle people together. That's one of his greatest skills is he can wrangle talented people and get everyone excited about this project. And that's why he elicits really good performances out of everyone.
One of the things I noticed when I was watching the episode was it's really honest and some of the scenes are quite explicit. So, you know, how do you deal with that?
Well, thank God I haven't had to do anything too risky. No one wants to see me without a shirt on. But it's been...
Well, when you've got Adam Richards there.
Exactly. Yeah. When you've got someone of that caliber, let's just get it done. I haven't had to do anything too full on. I've had to, you know, there's issues with me. The character Toby is dating someone called Peter who's HIV positive. So there's a lot of stuff in our relationship about disclosure and about how to deal with a relationship where someone's positive and some's not. So emotionally, the show, my character's gone on a really big journey. And there's a lot of sexual stuff as well, which thank God, I'm not in that.
And your character also has a bit of a penchant for a drop.
He does.
Likes a drink and occasionally picks up another young twink and causes a bit of a ruckus.
That's where we differ, me and my character.
Yes, of course. We've quickly got to let you go because we have to move on and put this first hour to bed. You're doing something with you've done something with the MTC that now is going to the Melbourne Theatre Company, which is now going to the Sydney Theatre Company.
Yep.
People can watch out for that. It's called?
The Sydney Theatre Company show is called Little Mercy, and I'm also part of the Neon program at MTC, which I think you're going to hear about.
I think we are, which we'll talk about a little later when we talk about the Melbourne Theatre Company Festival of Independent Theatre in the next hour. Ash, great to see you. Thanks for coming in and joining us on a Saturday morning. You don't look hungover.
Oh, well, I feel it. And there's not enough breath mints in the world.
Don't forget to help him buy some more booze for the next party by watching Being Brando.
On the interwebs. It is 5 minutes to 11 here on Joy 94.9. This is Saturday Magazine with Lana and Pete. We'll be with you until midday.
Saturday Magazine, every week from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
Yes, and we'd like to hear from you. We need to know if you're awake. 0427 Joy 949 is the number for a message. You can email on air at joy.org.au. You can phone 1300 Joy 949. Or you can download an app on your iPhone or your HTC or your Galaxy or whatever phone you use. You can get that from our website at joy.org.au. Download the app and then you contact us direct because we would love to hear from you. I've just had a quick look at some news and two British soldiers have been killed at the base where third in line to the throne, Prince Harry, is stationed in Afghanistan.
Okay.
More bad news out of Afghanistan, which we don't like. I can't believe how this hour has gone so quickly, Lana.
I know. It's only my second time, and last time and this time. It just happens so quickly, bit by bit.
That's the joy of the wireless, my dear.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, have you had a highlight so far?
Well, as you mentioned, the quivering before with Ash was, quite intense. I was happy with that.
Quivering with anticipation. He's such an excitable little fellow, and that series is so much fun to watch. As we said, it was formerly called Queer as Something, an internet-based TV show with, look at that, it does have a stellar cast as well, and he's very much a part of that.
Mm-hmm. And very honest as well. Those are conversations I've had with my friends.
Oh, yes.
Over and over, and my mother, and yeah.
Your mother? You've been having this conversation with your mother?
I have, yeah.
Have you got your mum to watch it?
No. I mean about my friends.
Oh, right.
I've had a few of them come out and sort of had these conversations with my mum and she'll have a conversation with their mums and, yeah, it's quite an interesting one, actually.
Now, we've got a very busy second hour as well. We're going to be speaking with Daniel Whithouse. He's a remarkable young man. He's done a bit of a world tour and he educates young people in schools about homophobia and he spends most of his time in regional Australia. He's going to be an exciting chat. We're also going to speak to Alex Scherfel, who's the creator of Tales of the Black Forest, which is a burlesque show at Red Benny's. And then something we were just talking about before, this Festival of Independent Theatre.
Yeah. The shows look really fascinating, actually. Mm.
And are you a sports fan? Do you like sport?
Not at all.
No sport of choice?
No. I know I'm a Collingwood supporter or I'm thrown out of my family. Okay, and I know I'm a Manchester United supporter or I'm executed. So beyond that, I'm not a massive sports fan. How about you?
A mad sports fan. So we're going to speak to Tanya. Interesting, you're a fan of two teams where one of the requirements is you don't actually own all of your own teeth.
Oh, absolutely.
And those Collingwood supporters.
I'm working on it.
Pink Magpie fans will be lying there ready to send me nasty messages, which I'm sure they will do. That's all coming up in the second hour along with our SatMag session person, Kate Wilson. We'd still love to hear from you. Do send us a message, an SMS 0427-JOY949. You can email onair@joy.org.au. You can phone 1300-JOY949 or send a tweet to SatMag@JOY949.
You're listening to Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9.
Ah, yes, thank you to Matt Thompson for the news with Apache Dribble. I'm sure I'm looking forward to some Apache Dribble. Thank you, Matt. And thanks also to Jess. Jess has been our program support person. She's clocked off and Mushin's clocked on. So if you want to call us, you can ring and speak to Mushin. 1300-JOY949 is the telephone number. You can email onair@joy.org.au. You can send an SMS to 0427-JOY949. Or you can send a tweet to SatMagJoy949 and have a conversation with Lara and I, who are taking you through right now until 12 o'clock.
I'd love to hear from people. This is awesome.
Yes, we do like to hear from people. We do have a text message suggesting that I hope everybody enjoys Rufus Wainwright tonight. I think I've got my diary on because I thought Rufus played a couple of nights ago in Melbourne.
I have no idea.
Maybe he's doing a second show.
I did actually just say to you when you've mentioned that, Rufus who? And, yeah, I'm sorry.
No, that's right. Rufus has just married his partner under the New York legislation.
Oh, wonderful.
In the great state of New York. About a week and a half ago, he married his partner, Yuren? Yuren, John?
Yeah, I didn't know who Rufus was. I've got no idea who he's married to. Okay?
I could talk to you about... you were talking earlier about music from the 60s and 70s. There was a fellow called Loudon Wainwright III, which is Rufus's father.
Oh, okay.
He married a folk singer from Canada. Her name was Katie McGarrigle.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a number of children, one of which is Rufus, and his sister Martha Wainwright, who is also, in her own right, a very talented young lady.
Yes. Very interesting.
Very, very interesting family. Some music royalty.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of royalty...
Talented musical royalty.
Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. And speaking of royalty, it's nice to have a queen in the studio. Sorry, that was the only segue I could come up with at no notice. He is our Joy 94.9 communiteer this week. His name is Daniel Whithouse, and it's very pleasing to have you in the studio because you're really in the country, sir.
Yes, it's great to be back. Thank you.
It's good to have you back. Let's talk about what you do, because what you do is quite remarkable, I think.
I'm not sure about that, but I hope it gets people excited and Yeah.
You spend a lot of time in regional communities in particular across Australia talking about homophobia and support for young gay and lesbian people in regional areas.
Yeah, I've been lucky enough to spend a lot of time. I was born and bred in rural regional Victoria and was lucky enough to...
Tell us where, what part?
The outer suburbs of Geelong, the windy city that it is.
Lovely.
And kind of grew up there. But a lot of my work has been in regional and rural Victoria, and in the recent years it's been around the country. So I've been able to get to every kind of nook and cranny around the country and talk to people and collect stories of LGBT people and work in lots of schools and mainstream organisations to kind of find out how they can do a better job, because certainly they're keen, but they're not necessarily going to put their hand up and say we're ready to do it. They need a little bit of encouragement.
How hard is it to push? I grew up in regional Victoria as well. It's and you know I'm a couple of decades before you, I think, in as much that my growing up in a very small community of 3,000 people in the Wheat Belt was incredibly difficult. How much has changed in the time that you've been sort of tripping around the country? How much has changed already?
Yeah, look, in the last 10 to 15 years, I think the thing that's changed the most is that this violence that we used to hear about in regional rural Australia that was almost commonplace for gay and lesbian people has pretty much disappeared. It's not that it doesn't happen, but it's not feared and it's not known about. It used to be infamous for these kinds of places. The other thing that's happened is that I guess people are much more willing to move away from these country areas and to move back. So we kind of see a lot of gay and lesbian people going back to the places where they grew up. What happened 10 to 15 years ago is lots of the anecdotes where people would go back to those places and say, we came back and it was just as crap as the first time around. Whereas 10 to 15 years later, they've said, look, we've had time to go away, have a think about this, come out, kind of, you know, work out what we want to do, but we've come back because, you know, of some reason. So usually it's because of people, it's because of purpose, or it's because of place. Like, I really need to get back here. And people have described that, you know, mostly as a positive, overwhelming experience.
Do you find there are programs sort of already in place that sort of just need a little bit of help from these people who've returned home and, you know, want to make the community a little bit more open and...
Yeah, look, there are some great examples of people who have done exactly that. Mm-hmm. But I guess the sobering news is that in most places there isn't something.
Yeah.
And that was overwhelming. Going all around the country, I kind of thought that there'd be a lot more in place because, you know, as we hear, it's better these days. But what mm-hmm. I found was there isn't a great deal if you're growing up and if you kind of not connected, you know, in the know, there's nothing visible or nothing kind of there that you can kind of grab onto in these places. And so lots of young people, if they do come out, if they do have the courage to do that, often people will say, well, why don't you just go to the city? And you know, it takes real strength of character and I met these young people who said, no, I'm staying here. Mm-hmm. I want to be here. There has to be more for me in this place.
Yeah. Was there like notification of national programs, things like Beyond Blue, online resources and things that people could access, or did they just have no idea that these things existed?
Look, it's really interesting with national campaigns. I mean, you know, we see that Beyond Blue is doing much more than they have done, and they've needed to. We've seen places like Headspace, who've got a really good record of doing stuff around the country. But the interesting thing is that young people don't always connect that to them. So you can kind of talk about depression and, you know, are you having any troubles and what's going on for you? And often young people don't connect it to, oh, I can actually go there and talk about this stuff, because, you know, this stuff for so many young people in country areas is different.
I guess that sort of brings us to a question that the growth of technology has allowed these online communities to exist, and where there is an online community, kids can feel connected regardless of where they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's probably a part of this change that we've talked about in the last 10 or 15 years, that the online communities have grown, so there isn't that sense of isolation that a lot of young people feel.
Yeah, look, I spoke to one young man who was in Byron Bay, and many people think that that's kind of the LGBT haven of kind of the East Coast. And what he was saying to me is it took him to see a YouTube video from someone in rural America for him to realise that there were other gay people out there. But he was living in Byron Bay. And so, you know, it was this thing of, I couldn't believe that there was all this stuff around me, but yet I didn't know. And he said, I actually cried when I saw that video because I didn't know that this could happen. And then he still felt, and he felt like a new isolation, because he said that I know that there are people out there, but you know, everywhere except for Byron Bay. And it took him a real kind of search to try and tap into the local LGBT communities and projects. Yeah.
What are the last bastions that we're yet to conquer, particularly across regional Australia? Is it sport?
Look, I think sport is so crucial. I mean, I know that that's a hot topic at the moment. Sport is so crucial in regional rural Australia because, you know, if the town doesn't revolve around drinking, it revolves around sport and or both. So it seems to be this thing. So we really need to make sure that we deal with sport well. The other thing that I think there's two big things for me. One is silence, because when I went around the country, I was the person who was starting the conversation. In most cases, what I found is that, you know, everyone, even the most resistant people in, you know, country Australia who I did speak to, has a story about LGBT people in their lives. So they have those stories there. And then the other thing I think is we really need to look at gender diversity as well, because it's something that is not even thought about. If gays and lesbians aren't, gender diversity isn't thought about across the country.
Daniel, it's always a pleasure to see you and to be the benefit of your wisdom. Thank you so much for joining us, and we wish you continued success with your programs.
A pleasure and thanks.
Good to have you, and it's 13 minutes past 11 here on SatMag on Joy 94.9.
Saturday Magazine, every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
That was Return to Oz by the Scissor Sisters from their album The Magic Hour, which was in fact released months and months ago, but I think because of Let's Have a Kiki, we're all wanting to have a kiki about the Scissor Sisters and the new album The Magic Hour, which I think is a ripper. Mm-hmm. Have you listened to it?
I haven't listened to the new one, no, because I'm lazy and, yeah, but I love their old stuff.
As Ian Molly Meldrum used to say on Countdown back in the 70s, do yourself a favour, go out and get the album. Because it is an absolute cracker. And, of course, we love the Scissor Sisters. They'll be playing in Melbourne in just a few weeks.
Mm, oh, wow. I did not know that. I need to find stuff out. How do you find this stuff out?
I spend a lot of time on interwebs.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I'm not looking in the right places.
Which listeners can do as well. They can go to joy.org.au. Mm-hmm. They can download the Joy app and they can contact us via the Joy app on their Android or Crackberry or that thing that you've got, or the thing that I've got, the iPhone. You can also email us on air at joy.org.au. You can SMS 0427 Joy 949. Send us a text message. Phone us. Speak to Mushin on the desk, 1300 Joy 949. Or what's the other thing that Macca says? Tie something to a dead pigeon and throw it in the window on the level 9 here. At a studio in the centre of Melbourne. Look, we're very excited because we're sort of, I feel like a bit of a horse wrangler. We're breaking in a young colt who, for future reference, will be our go-to sort of arts and theatre commentator. We're breaking him in, and they've been very kind to let me do that. His name is Daniel Clemens. He's a student at Melbourne University, an art student, a former student of the Victorian College of the Arts, and... Well, I understand, and you're a bit of a fan of the art scene right here in Melbourne.
Well, yeah, I guess about a theatre, I'm a very avid theatre goer. So.
Have you yet seen the New South Pacific that opened a couple of nights ago?
No, that's not really for me the kind of theatre that I want to see.
So you don't do musical theatre?
Yeah, no, not really, but I do like Phantom of the Opera.
I was going to say, you can hand your gay cat back in at Window 5 on your way out, if that's the case.
How disappointed were you with the sequel?
It was pretty terrible.
It was pretty terrible.
It had a nice set, though. I like the set. The set was great.
I'm sure it was very expensive.
What is it called? Love Never Dies. Yes, correct.
I think they call it Paint Never Dries. That's the other title for it.
And look, I think when you've got something as successful as Phantom of the Opera, that if it ain't broke, don't try and fix it, Andrew Lloyd Webber, please.
Exactly.
Too long in Hollywood. He's trying to make a sequel and then it's
too much plastic surgery. Have you seen him?
Oh, my God. It's terrifying.
It's getting a bit frightening. He's looking more like a woman every day. he's good self. Now, you want to talk to us about the Festival of Independent Theatre, which it's a first for Melbourne's Melbourne Theatre Company.
Yeah, it is.
It's happening. Is it this year or is it next year?
It's next year, the beginning of next year. I think it's between the months of March and July. It's very exciting because, like you said, it's for the first that Melbourne Theatre Company's ever done this before. So they've kind of gone out to Melbourne and kind of checked all these independent theatre groups out and found the ones that I guess are kind of breaking the threshold of what's coming up next with theatre. And Melbourne Theatre Company have never really done that. They do very safe productions.
Yes and no. I think Melbourne Theatre Company have been reasonably brave in the past couple of years with some of the productions they've they've put on and some of the things they've challenged. And somebody I know who's just done a wonderful show, Noni Hazelhurst, just did a brilliant show with MTC, which was attracted to rave reviews. Let's talk through these little theatre programmes that we're talking about. The first of which, we had Ash Flanders in here just before.
Yeah, who's
a cracking young fellow.
He's a great man.
Hungover to the boot, he is. So here's the Sisters Grimm. So talk to us about Sisters Grimm, perhaps, to start.
Well, Sisters Grimm is really, it's great. I think it's a really good example of great queer theatre in Melbourne. The last show they did was Summertime in the Garden of Eden.
Mm-hmm.
It was really great. It's awesome acted, great script, and hilarious as hell. It was just like really fun to go to the theatre, which is a good change to go to the theatre and be bored or think this is not very good at all.
Okay, so that's my kind of theatre. Because I honestly, the idea of going to the theatre is terrifying because it just seems so earnest and boring.
Well, this is why they're so great. Like, anyone can go see it. I know it's queer theatre, like there's boys dressing up as girls, that kind of thing, but it doesn't matter
at all. You get that on a Friday night at the local pub these days.
Exactly.
That's hardly groundbreaking anymore.
But at least this will... It's such a good time. Like, it's so... yeah, it's so entertaining, and just this is what I think theatre should be.
It engages a little bit more, too.
And you're having fun, and I mean, you're learning stuff, sure. But at the end of the day, you're just having a great time.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Is there anything in particular you're really looking forward to, or?
For the festival. Sisters Grimm are great. The Hayloft Project are actually also. They're another group there, and they're ex-VCA graduates too.
Okay. People?
I guess you could say that. But they're all very, I hate to use the word cutting edge. That sounds silly, doesn't it? But,
well, in 5 minutes, cutting edge is not going to be cutting edge. And,
exactly.
And it's like technology. It's constantly being superseded by the next cutting edge thing. So certainly you could talk avant-garde or something that's a little outside the box currently.
Yeah, a bit outside the box, I guess. That's the best description to use. But exactly like Sisters Grimm, their last show was in a garage in Thornbury, and now they're performing at the MTC and Sydney Theatre Company. They're doing their old show Little Mercy, which is great.
When we talk about independent theatre, if we were to look at things like the Malthouse Theatre or the little theatre out in Carlton that's been there forever and has been in danger of closing down about six times, La Mama.
Yeah.
Is that considered independent theatre, or are we talking something that's even a little more fringe?
Well, La Mama definitely. I think Malthouse too. Malthouse is also quite. It depends what you really want to call independent, because like anything that isn't a musical and the MTC could be independent, kind of.
Well, I guess so. Speaking of the Malthouse, Paul Capps' new show, Angela's Kitchen, is an absolute must see.
Yeah,
he's currently playing at the Malthouse. It's extraordinary.
Great. And also Pale Blue Dot is also playing there, and that's supposed to be amazing. I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard great reviews.
And Pinocchio.
Oh, okay.
We went and saw Pinocchio, my partner and I, a week or so ago, which is a family show, and there was kids in the audience, which is kind of my idea of hell. But it was a really, really well-written show and great performances, a bit of music in there, a very well-thought-out show. Look, we're going to be really pleased to have you back over the coming months to talk about what's happening in the Melbourne theatre scene and to keep us abreast, if you will, of more of the independent stuff. Thank you for joining us, Daniel.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
It's a pleasure. He is a nice-looking young man as well. You can probably Google him and find a picture they may have done in a magazine or a film somewhere. It is 26 minutes past 11. We'd still love to hear from you. 0427-JOY949. You can email onair@joy.org.au. Phone us on 1300-JOY949. Send us a tweet to @SatMagJOY949. We do get in touch with us. We need to know that you're awake, Melbourne. We want to hear from you, don't we, Lana?
We do.
We're getting a bit concerned that we're just talking amongst ourselves.
Well, it would be a regular day for me, but, I want to make an effort. I want people to, want to chat to people.
Yes,
about what they want to hear about.
If they're in their car, if they're in their bed, if they're in the supermarket, wherever you are, you may even be in our local Subway store, which is just a couple of doors down, which does play this program. In fact, plays our station all of the time.
Hi, guys.
So, yes, good morning to Subway in Bourke Street. Thank you very much for your constant support. We'll be back after these messages, and we'll speak with Alex Scherfel from who's got a new production happening at Red Benny's.
Saturday Magazine, every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
I do like it when we have a bit of music from my era. That was Leslie Gore with You Don't Own Me, a song I believe that was released in the 60s. Like I was released in the 60s.
Oh, really?
Yes, yes.
I would have absolutely said 70s.
Oh, thank you. Your kindness. We were talking with the very gorgeous young Daniel Clemens, who's going to be our new arts reviewer. He did very well for his first time. I think you all should give him a bit of a hand. And now we move to theatre of a different kind, because it involves... Well, look, it involves a bit of boobs and bum, I should think. But we'll hear more about it because we have the creator of the show, Alex Scherfel, with us, and also Eden Reed, who's the choreographer and co-writer of Tales of the Black Forest, the X-18 Burlesque. The title itself, gentlemen, sort of intimates that this is not something for the kids.
No. Generally, burlesque isn't for kids anyway, I think it's pretty safe to say. But this one, we're pushing a little bit further with the themes. Yeah, giving you unexpected experience. Burlesque tends to have people come in with this preconception of what they're going to see. We're going to try to take that preconception, then just push the envelope just a little bit further than what they expect.
Because burlesque, when we think about burlesque, we think of, let's look at the Moulin Rouge sort of style, where there's a bit of boob, there's a bit of bum,
yeah,
there's
the
a bit of dance,
there's
some singing
and
feathers.
And
sounds like a Friday night at the Greyhound.
Well, Friday night at the Greyhound, we have a lot of flesh. It's very sexy, but it's a big stage show. Here, yep. Burlesque is usually about 5 minutes long. It has a song to it. Mm. It's the recreation of a track, and it usually has a comedic hook. Here we have a long line of narrative. We're actually telling stories with the Artites, and we're trying to see if we can make one person taking off their clothes sexy. Why can't another person taking off their clothes be sexy? And who says that burlesque is a solo sport?
They can all take off their clothes and it could be sexy, I should think.
Three people makes it three times as sexy, I think.
Three people makes it a threesome, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It depends on what they're doing on stage.
So is there a particular story? You say there's a narrative running through it, so what's the main theme?
There's four stories all up. We chose the fairy tales for this particular one because both Eden and I wanted to explore fairy tales as sort of seminal stories that we could make quite naughty.
And they've got an innocence attached to them that people, again, preconceptions, the innocence of the fairy tales.
And the fairy tales we're talking about are Grimm fairy tales, yeah. Brothers Grimm.
Yeah, and a big mix of different... Right. You can come along and see the show to find out exactly who we've got.
We'd like to tease people.
Well, one's red, one's white, and one's gold. I think that's a pretty safe way to tease you into it.
The Grimm fairy tales also have quite a dark undertone to them.
Exactly. That's why we wanted to explore these ones. The, the more fairy end of fairy tales we'll probably end up doing soon after this, with a bit more special effects. This one's darker, it's extremely sexual, so we really are putting the limits of what can go on stage up here.
Oh, wow, I want to go see it now.
And hence why we're calling it the X-18 Burlesque, because it's really... There's a lot of burlesque that is kind of family-friendly, like cabaret burlesque, showgirl burlesque, that kind of stuff. This is something that you would not take your parents to. I've shown my parents the leather.
You haven't
pride
met my mother. She would love it.
I showed my parents.
I'm starting to love your mother. I'm sure your mother
is
Shirley MacLaine.
Everybody loves my mother.
In exploring these fairy tales, predominantly when they were written, had some sort of political context to them as well. That they were written about something that was happening politically or socially in the time that they were written. How much of this deals with issues that are now political or social now?
They still all have moral messages and cautionary tales and all of that substance still in them. And that was one of the challenges of working with burlesque as an art form, was that you would still be able to convey themes and have substance in the stories. So really trying to adhere to an overarching narrative, let alone four, is an interesting challenge. And I think that we've sort of come around and not only made something that's a bit different and a bit exciting, it's actually really entertaining.
And parody is something that's existed in burlesque since the start. Parody's always been a big part of it. So it's been important to bring that up to the current day and weave in some references that the modern-day audiences will recognise, but also stay true to the fantastical nature. And the Black Forest element is these characters in this particular version of the series. We're planning a series, right, Alex?
Yeah.
They're all forest-based, so it's that dark forest that we're really exploring.
And, Alex, you've had some involvement with Melbourne's leather community and still do, so how much of that scene, which in itself is a subset of our culture, will find its way into some of these performances?
Well, you'll definitely see that strain existing
here, not only in the sexual content, but in some of the styling. I think that the, that kind of Bavarian art theme lends itself to leather a little bit.
Yes, it does.
And while we're working with the very best of burlesque performers, both male and female, there is quite a lot of homosexual anthem in it.
Mm-hmm.
The sexual content isn't straightforward, let's say.
Now, somebody who is, I'm assuming it's the same Michael Dalton.
It is.
From the Royal Daltons.
Indeed.
On Wednesday on Joy 94.9. And Michael as Michael, and not Michael as one of his alter egos that exist.
No, it is. It's still a character for Michael, but it's a character that's closer to him as a real person.
It's a character with poise and grace and affability.
And camp.
And camp and nonce.
There is an edge to the character that he plays. He's also playing a fairy tale character. He's not just hosting. It'd spoil it for us to tell you exactly what he did, though.
I'm sure it will. Now, Red Binnies is known very much as a supporter of our community, but also as a great supporter of burlesque. Was this an easy relationship to create with Red Binnies?
I think because both of
particularly
us...
Particularly easy.
Because both of us work in the arts outside of being of running Red Binnies events team.
Yes.
This is probably, I think, one of the first productions that we're actually doing for ourselves rather than just producing to Red Benny's audiences. So we've got a little bit more freedom to do something adventurous, whereas, I don't know, would we have let someone else put this on stage?
No. Not that we'd want to do it ourselves, but that's, I mean, true. Alex works as a producer at Red Benny's, and so do I, and I work as a production manager, and Alex works in marketing. So we've just made a decision. We said, well, why don't we put on a show? Instead of putting on other people's shows, which we love doing, but it's putting our money where our mouth is to an extent as well, and putting something creative for ourselves on the stage.
So every time I drive past Red Benny's, even the audience gets into the burlesque theme. It's a very distinctive audience. So are you trying to get sort of new people in, people who may not have experienced this world before?
Absolutely. We have people like to come and experience Red Benny's in the full package. Like they'll dress up, they'll get out there. It's one of the few places that you can actually go and get your freak on.
You can wear anything and no one looks at you twice.
That's a good thing, because there's a lot of people who do like to express themselves through the way they dress. Guys, this play is 2021-22, so Thursday, Friday, Saturday at Red Benny's. You can find out more information at redbennies.com. Eden and Alex, thank you for joining us this morning.
Pleasure, thanks for
having
me.
Good luck with this show. It is 22 minutes to 12 here on Joy 94.9. This is Saturday Magazine. Lauren and I, we have barely 20 minutes to go, and our relationship this morning is done.
Oh, wow. It's gone so quickly.
People have said that before. 21 minutes to 12, Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9.
Saturday Magazine, every week from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
Yes, this is Saturday Magazine. 15 minutes to go or thereabouts. SMS, thank you. Guys, may I ask a small question? That song was delicious. Who is the artist? The artist is Betty Carter. The song was called Open the Door, and you'll find that on the soundtrack to American Beauty. A regular segment on this program, SACMAG Sessions. This week we're featuring Kate Wilson. She comes from a little place most of us probably haven't heard of. Biak is a tiny town inland from Geelong, nestled by a lake amongst some rather lovely wineries. As a songwriter, Kate's lyrics speak of deeply personal journeys and can take you to the places far from where you happen to be. Kate spoke to our very own Ben Rylan, our executive producer on this show. We trust you shall enjoy this little interlude.
Saturday Magazine's SACMAG Sessions on Joy 94.9.
It's called 15, because I wrote it when I was 15.
Yeah.
That's about as far as it comes from.
So what's the significance of 15, though?
Well, it's just how old I was.
But that's a very good reason. What do you think was happening at the age of 15 that culminated in those sorts of feelings coming out via a song?
I don't think it's anything that was particularly happening. Most of the stuff I write isn't about stuff that's necessarily happening. They're just things I dream up. A lot of them aren't, like...
They're not literal happenings in your life.
Not generally, no. They can be from a film, from another song I listen to.
Do you genuinely feel the sorts of moods that you're getting across in your songs? Or is it something that you're conjuring up?
No, I think a lot of it's genuine feeling. They're sort of things I'm feeling, but I've seen through someone else that I write about them. I guess I make a character up within myself who's based on myself and write about them.
So this song in particular, have you played that? Have you recorded that before? Have you played it for anyone?
I'll play it for Isaac, my boyfriend.
Isaac, your boyfriend Isaac, who is here. Hello, Isaac. So what are your plans for this song?
I'm not sure.
It's still too fresh for you to really know.
Yes. Well, it was actually just completed out in the waiting room.
So ultimate dreams. So we're talking ultimate dreams right now. Where do you want to go?
I'm not sure. I'd just like to just be able to do it, keep creating. Yeah, just I don't wish for great success or anything like that. I just sort of would like to be able to do it.
You just want to keep doing it.
Yeah.
Magazine every week from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
It is 11 minutes to 12 here on Joy 94.9. This is Saturday Magazine. We've almost flipped through all of the pages, and as we do flip through the pages, Lana, we invariably get to the end of the paper, which talks about sport. Now, you're not a sports fan, you told me earlier. There's nothing that lifts your skirt in sport whatsoever.
No, not at all.
But you are a Collingwood and Manchester United supporter.
Yes, because one of the most hated teams in the world was not enough for my family.
They've gone with both. And I did make reference to something about teeth before. Tanya, we've got a bit to talk about then, you and I, haven't we?
Certainly do.
How are you?
Exciting week. Yeah, very well, thank you. How are you guys? You're enjoying the warming up of the Melbourne weather, I hope?
Yeah, it's cloudy and grey here, you know. Cloudy with a chance of meatballs or something, I think, today. Tanya, let's start. I just want to backtrack a little bit because the finest performance by an Australian Paralympic team since Sydney 2000 on home turf. Extraordinary sights through those Paralympic Games.
Oh, it was fantastic, wasn't it? And, you know, we ended up being fifth on the overall medal tally, and we were ahead of the USA. We didn't get above Great Britain, unfortunately, but we did very well. And
home ground advantage for them.
Exactly, home ground advantage, and I did enjoy the wheelchair rugby team. They closed our Paralympic campaign with a great gold medal. So that was
and what a cracking sport that is to watch. It's brutal, but it was really good fun. Now I wanted to particularly mention a couple of people because, as you know, a former water sports child I am. Matt Cowdery becoming our most successful Paralympian ever.
Isn't he an absolute legend?
He's an absolute delight.
Well, isn't he?
He's you want to take him home to your mother. He's that sort of boy. And Jackie Freeney, eight gold medals.
I mean, all the performances in the pool at the Paralympics was just amazing, wasn't it? And Prue Watt, she also added to the gold medal tally as well, the Aussies in the pool. And, yeah, she broke an Oceania record, apparently, so that she did very well there. And
The little 15-year-old boy pushing in the men's 100 metres, taking a silver medal, he's like 15.
Yeah, aren't they just amazing?
Look, just phenomenal. So we want to congratulate our Paralympic team. Now, a bit of footy last night, though. We want to talk about Freo and Adelaide.
I'm a Freo supporter.
So I know that. So we're going to make it very brief. You lost.
Oh, yes, we lost by 10 points. 10 points short of a preliminary final. Very disappointing, but...
Honey, I'm a North Melbourne supporter, and after what West Coast did to us last week, I have no sympathy for anybody.
that was pretty hard for you to watch, a 96-point
It was brutal. Now, the mullet, the boy with the mullet from Adelaide...
Yeah, Taylor Walker. He was the difference between the two sides. He gold up to half time, and then two goals at the start of the third quarter, I think, was the difference in the match, and it meant, you know, the 10 points really at the end of it all. So he was fantastic for the Crows, and they've got a couple of injury concerns heading into the prelim against Hawthorn next week. But I think Sanderson's such a good coach for Adelaide. He's quite a calm character, isn't he?
And like he was as a player, fantastic.
Yeah, very much so. I think it's good for the Crows and their culture. One of the big things for the Crows is that they just hung in there. And I think Freo, because they were chasing towards the end, they did look very tired. And as soon as you start chasing, you do look very tired. But I think Freo did very well considering their start to the season.
Yes, correct.
And that they certainly stepped up with their forwards. But I think heading into 2013, if Freo can get a couple of big tall forwards, that will help out the outfit a bit, and so a force to be reckoned with in 2013, one would hope.
Indeed. Collingwood and the West Coast play one another tonight. How are you tipping after West Coast's performance last week and indeed Collingwood's performance last week?
Yeah, they've been a bit topsy-turvy with each other this season, but I think if players like Dane Beams and Dale Thomas step up for the Pies, they will do very well. But the thing with West Coast Eagles, they can be pretty powerful when players like Dean Cox and Nick Natanui are on fire.
They're brutal, the two of them.
And Alistair Lynch is in the side as well, which we were thinking that maybe he might have been fine during the week, but he got through that, so he's playing as well for the Eagles, which gives them a bit of power up forward. So I think it's going to be a cracking match and a very close match, and I think it will come down to resilience. My tip will be Collingwood, just because it's on home soil.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the only advantage for them. Now, we saw the Manly Seagulls beat the North Queensland Cowboys last night with a fairly resounding victory. Rabbitohs play the Rabbitohs from Sydney play the Canberra Raiders tonight. Who's your tip?
Because of just the way the Canberra Raiders are, I think they're a pretty tough side, and I mean, they're pretty tough to handle in defence as well, so I'll go for Canberra for that one.
Very good. And a grand final playoff, who are we going to see, do you think, in the NRL?
Well, we've got Manly and Melbourne on the other side. I'll think Manly might come up against Melbourne. That's my tip there. So Manly and the Raiders, that's my tip.
Wholeheartedly disagreeing with you, which is fantastic. And look, we've seen Bernard Tomic pull his head in and actually play a bit of tennis. He beat Steve in the Davis Cup. Hewitt, unfortunately, out to the lesser-ranked Florian Mayer.
Yes, that was very disappointing for Hewitt, wasn't it? But he's holding injuries at the moment. And he's
why is he still in this team? Why is he still in this team when there are a number of other, I think, equally as talented younger men behind him who aren't racked with, you know, dodgy knees and gammy hips and buggered elbows?
Well, do you know, the answer to that is that Hewitt brings that Davis Cup spirit, doesn't he? Whenever he
True.
Puts the green and gold on, he provides that spirit within the side. And a player like Bernard Tomic, who Pat Rafter labelled as a disgraceful performance in his US Open effort against Andy.
Well, it was Roddick, disgraceful. It looked like he wasn't there. He wasn't bothered at all.
Yeah, he done that like a little spoilt little teenager sometimes.
He needs a good swift kick up the date. Tanya, good to talk to you. We'll keep an eye on that Davis Cup between Australia and Germany. We are at one game each, and it's quite possible with Hewitt's doubles and mixed doubles experience that we can quite easily get over the Germans. Thank you, as always, for joining us, and we imagine you shall be glued to your television tonight for the Collingwood game against the West Coast. I'm tipping Collingwood by 12 points. You're on the Pies, and... Lana, you're a Pies supporter, so you have
Pies
to be on them as well.
Pies all the way.
Pies all the way.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Tanya.
Thanks, guys, and have a great Saturday.
Good to talk to you again. That's Tanya Jones. She's our resident sports commentator. We're going to have a couple of messages, and we're coming back to wrap up this baby and put it to bed.
Saturday Magazine, every week from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
Thank you to our correspondent who has reminded me that I do have the early onset dementia. My name is Susan, and does anybody know where my blouse is? Apparently Rufus is playing tonight and tomorrow night at the Art Centre, supported by the very fabulous Megan Washington. I do apologise. Speaking of fabulous, the man who is not, tell us what's happening on Detours, Greg.
We have jam-packed 1 hour of Detours today. We're doing two threads. One thread's with Meredith Little about children of Cambodia. Her and her husband went overseas and set up a foundation that's working with primary age kids in Cambodia. But we're going to turned the show on its tail before that with Barnaby Ryder, Barnaby Reader, and he's the musician that's got his ensemble, and they're playing in Suitcases, Baggage and Other Synonyms. So we'll have some live music in the studio for Detours.
Good heavens, it's going to be a hard act to follow up on Cravings at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, stay with us.
That's Greg and the team on Detours taking you traipsing about the world. Lana, it's all over.
I know.
We have to say some thank yous, first of all.
Yes.
Do you want to run through that list, or we'll tag team through the list?
Oh, okay. So, first of all, we had Patrick Gilligan from OurSay.org.
Lovely David Eccles, our tech guru.
Ash Flanders from Being Brendo.
The very fabulous Daniel Whithouse.
Then we had Alex and Eden from Tales of the Black Forest at Red Benny's.
Our very new arts commentator, Daniel Clemens, our man about town.
Kate Wilson, singer-songwriter.
And our sports and arts, Tanya. But the two most important people we have to thank, the very fabulous Ben Ryland, who is our executive producer.
And Matt Nock on the panel.
Who is also very fabulous. Next week, Saturday Magazine will be hosted by the very talented comedian Matthew Klein. He's back on our shores after a long stay in LA, and he's performing as part of the upcoming Melbourne Fringe Festival, kicks off September 26. All proceeds from his show will go to Beyond Blue. It's going to be a great show. Be sure to tune in next Saturday from 10 a.m. Lana, it's been a joy to share this journey with you, and no doubt we will do it again.
I certainly hope so. It was very much fun.
Join Greg and the team from Cravings, and I'll be back at 1 o'clock. Sorry.
You've been listening to Saturday Magazine on Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.